This oral history is brought to you with the support of Guttman students and staff and funded by the American Council of Learned Societies and the Mellon Foundation. Enjoy.
Hello, my name is Laetitia Zan. I'm interviewing today Edouard Nerly in my house on the date on April 12, 2021. Mr. Edouard.
Yes.
Do you give me the permission to record it and distribute this oral interview?
Yes.
The first question I'm going to start to ask you today is about COVID-19. But you don't have to answer all of the questions if you don't feel comfortable.
No problem.
Okay. How are you coping with the pandemic?
The pandemic has affected me, and I had COVID-19. I was in a hospital in a rehabilitation place for a total of 5 months. I personally almost died 3 times. And after the last rehabilitation place to rehab me, I had to learn how to walk again, how to use my hands. The COVID-19 affected me with my nerves, with my hands, my legs, my bladder. I had to use a catheter for almost 4.5 months. It took like the month of August of last year to take the catheter out and get my bladder to work right again.
Okay. The next question is going to be, do you have a self-routine?
If I have a what?
The self-routine, the self-care routine.
Do you have a self-care routine?
Yeah.
Yes, I had it for a little while. I was taking care of myself, and I also had my son, who was my caretaker.
What was your initial response to the COVID and how has it changed over the time?
Oh, my initial problems was the COVID, getting sick, being in the hospital for so many months, and so many months in the rehabilitation center. And I'm still being affected by it 1 year later, because I had got sick with the COVID April 2nd of 2020, and here it is April 12th, and it's still affecting me. I got to go to pain management person, doctor. I got to also go on the 15th. I got to see my urologist in reference to having a catheter in my bladder. On the 19th, I see my pulmonologist at the VA hospital for my lungs and having a COVID-19.
Have you or someone close to you gotten COVID?
Yes, I had about 3 people who had the COVID. Two of my aunts and my uncle, they all died.
What was that like?
It was rough because one of my aunts is my mother's baby sister. And she raised me ever since I was like 2 years old. She raised me till I was like 13, and then I went back to live with my mother.
Did you lose anyone close to you?
Yes. My uncle and two of my aunts.
Could you tell me a little bit about them?
Well, my aunt, my mother's baby sister, she was a real nice person. She took care of me from the time I was a baby, like I said, until I was 13. Because my mother needed somebody to take care of me. I was the only child. And my mother was working, taking care of herself and me. And my other aunt is my mother's brother's wife. Her name is Aunt Mary. She passed away from COVID. Her husband, my Uncle Leroy, he had it. He was able to make it. And then one of my mother's younger brothers, he had got COVID, and he passed away from that.
How are you coping financially?
Oh, pretty good. Because I was working before the COVID. I was doing digital dental technician work in a lab. So I have my unemployment now and my Social Security from the COVID. So I get paid every week. And then once a month, I get paid with my Social Security. So far, it's sustaining me. It allows me to do things and have money. So I'm okay.
Okay, Mr. Nelly, the next question is going to be, what was it like to be home so often?
No, it's for so long. Oh, it was rough. Because I didn't see anybody. I didn't see anyone. Every now and then, I would see my my son that lives in the city. But then he started coming around more. And then my son out in Long Island that I stayed with for 6 weeks when I came out of the rehabilitation state center, I stayed with him for about 6-7 weeks. So I got a chance to see my son out in Long Island. And other than that, basically right now I'm home. I have a roommate. He works like 12 hours a day. So I'm there like 12 hours a day by myself. I miss being around people. I'm very social, like to talk about different things and talk about things to teach people younger than me. So it was kind of rough being home by myself.
How did it impact you socially, mentally, and emotionally?
It impacted me socially that I wasn't able to be around anyone on a regular basis like I used to be. Emotionally affected me, make me feel a little depressed. Not happy, you know, not able to see my family and people, you know, I care about, people I love. So it was kind of rough. It's kind of rough, but we all got to cope with it. You know, we can't all be social gathering around each other right now. So to help the COVID and help ourselves, we have to follow the rules, you know, wear your mask, social distance, you know, washing your hands, keeping your area okay. You know, talking to family and friends like on the telephone. That's it, because even now, with them giving you the vaccinations, you still got to be very cautious about it because it has like 3 to 4 different variants so they can affect you at any time. And the last two variants is very contagious and easy to spread. So basically, I stay home. I come outside, I have my mask on and my shield. Plus, I'm using oxygen because my lungs are low. Weak and damaged from the COVID. And I deal with sarcoidosis also, which is another lung disease. And the beginning stages of a COPD and emphysema. Everything that's basically wrong with me is in my lungs.
The next question is going to be like, but I say, you don't have to answer all of the questions.
Don't worry about it.
If you don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. Are people in your household working?
Yes, one person. That's it. It's just two of us living together, my roommate and myself. He works.
What have you learned about yourself and your family since the beginning of this crisis?
Okay. Well, I learned how to be my own best friend, to be by myself, you know. sometimes it's funny, and sometimes it's boring. And a lot of times I'll be trying to focus, and I get foggy brain, you know. Like, you're trying to think about things, and because you're not talking to people, it's like you wind up talking to yourself, you know. Or thinking out loud, as they would say, you know. That's what I learned that about myself. I could be my own best friend right now.
What has been the hardest part of this pandemic for you?
Not being around people, not being able to socialize. That's one of my biggest problems.
Has there been anything positive to come out of this pandemic for you?
Oh, to think positive and keep your faith and decide what, you know, your next moves are going to be as far as, you know, when the COVID gets to the point that it's safe. You know, it's never going to really go away, ever, you know. Because in this pandemic, you got people that's going to take the vaccination. And in this pandemic, you got people that's not going to take it. So why not taking it, it's going to affect all of us because we won't be able to get rid of the COVID. So we'll always be in a state of social distancing because of the COVID, yeah. So we have to worry about that.
How has the COVID-19 changed? How do you think about the relation between our health as an individual and our health as a society?
Well, in my health, in myself, I'm more conscientious about it. I've always been conscientious about my health. I don't play with it. You know, if I have anything wrong with me, I go get it taken care of. I was, you know, I'm blessed to have a doctor for 19 years that knows me, knows my family. So that's a big difference. As far as the social and the society, it's going to affect all of us. A lot of people don't see it that way, but it's going to affect all of us because you have to have a very high percentage of people following the rules, masks, washing your hands, distancing, and taking the COVID vaccination. You need to take that because, like, I went through a situation with a pandemic in the 50s when little kids were getting polio. When they was getting polio, Dr. Jonas Salk was the one who came up with the vaccination for polio. A lot of people was hesitant of taking it, and they went through a period where people weren't taking it, and little kids were coming up with polio. And that's polio. They got to live with that for the rest of their life. So, you know, just imagine if people don't take their vaccinations that they need to eradicate things and make things not exist anymore. That's what they did with polio for all of us around the world. Yes. You know, so just imagine if the first people never took the polio shot. What would the world do then? They won't take it either.
They will not take it.
And see, if they didn't take it, what would happen? You see people that had polio, right? You seen people who had polio. Just imagine living like that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
In a wheelchair, crutches, canes, and all of that, just because you didn't take a shot, or you didn't take the drops in your mouth, because you had the polio vaccine where they dropped the drops in your mouth. You had that. That was polio. That's polio too. The first one was the injection you had when you was a baby.
Yes.
So just imagine if you didn't take those shots. You took the chance of having polio.
Yes.
And living with that for the rest of your life. Believe me, you would be a real big handicap to you. You can't do for yourself, or you could be severe where you're laying in the bed. You know.
How do you think the government handled the COVID crisis?
Well, myself personally, I know for a fact when I got sick in 2020, right? In 2019, October of 2019, Trump and everybody in this country knew about the COVID-19 and did nothing about it. He didn't let us know about it, and he knew about it. He could have told people right then to shut it down. Yeah, you know how many hundreds, you imagine how many hundreds of thousands of people he could have saved?
No, I can't imagine.
It's 575,000 people who died from COVID in this country alone, the highest in the whole world.
Yeah, I saw.
We got more deaths in the United States than any country anywhere on the planet. That's ridiculous. And we're the most richest industrial country in the world. We have the money, we have the means and the ways to do these things. If this man would have been honest from the beginning, you could have been 6-7 months ahead of the game. Because he didn't start talking about COVID until March. And look how he was dealing with Hong Kong flu, all this stuff, all this derogatory, negative type of stuff. The man is crazy. He messed up things here in this country. That's why this country's in the state that it's in. Look, you got Korea. You got Taiwan. You got Singapore. You know what I'm saying? These people only had 200-300 people that got COVID. You understand? Because they shut it down. Everybody, all the health department people wearing the big suits, white suits, with the oxygen masks and everything, right? Going around, restraining people, putting them in hotels, putting them in their house to make sure that they stayed inside and didn't travel around and social distance some. When they did that, and all those people were wearing masks, and people in this country here was laughing like it was a joke, they don't hardly have any COVID. If you find 100 to 1,000 people with COVID in Korea and different places like that, you're lucky. You're lucky. You know, so it wasn't, as far as myself personally, it was not handled right in this country. It was not handled right in this country. That's my opinion.
How will you grade the job the government did in rolling out the vaccine?
Well, they did the best that they can because they had to basically wait until Biden came in, you know? The first people to get the vaccine was, I think it was in December. And she took the second shot. Black woman here in New York took the second shot in January. But this vaccination that they had, they could have had it out 3 to 6 months earlier. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
But listen to this here. And you might know, you might not know, you might have heard. Every 25 to 60 days, they can make a new vaccine for different diseases. The vaccine that they made now for COVID, you know what they did to the genes? They cut it. They spliced it. They took a section out of the DNA. And then they put another disease in there, right? And that disease that they put into that DNA creates another vaccine. So things that people are getting sick from now, and they have now, now they have the sequence, the DNA sequence, the helix, for the genetics. They have the sequence and how to make vaccines for a lot of diseases. It's going to help a lot of different people. The same thing that they did with AIDS. When people in New York and around the world had got AIDS and HIV, right? They literally had to take 50 to 60 pills a day. You know? Right now, they only have to take one pill daily. And that happened because the geneticist was able to design and study and make the new medication for people to take. So you imagine taking 25 pills and now all you got to do is take one. You go to the lab and they check you, your blood doesn't show any HIV or AIDS. That's how it is now. You see the commercials on TV?
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So just imagine, if nobody took the chance of making that decision to splice the helix for the genetics and everything, and the DNA, then they would have came up with that medicine. And just imagine you come up with a medicine where somebody's taking 25 pills, now you only got to take one. Now, suppose the people who had HIV say, oh, I don't want to take that because it's never been tested. Where would they be at today? They still would have HIV detection in their body, and they'll be taking 25 pills instead of taking one pill. That's the same thing with the COVID. You know, right now, people don't want to take it, but they're gambling with their life because now you just don't have COVID-19 by itself. You don't have that. You have COVID-19 plus four different other versions of COVID-19. And the other last two that they have is more dangerous than the very first one. It's more contagious. You can get it, you can get that like this. Very fast.
Yeah. Will you be getting a vaccine?
I have it already. I have both. I have both vaccinations. I have my first vaccination in February 9th. And have my second vaccination March the 12th. So I have my passport, ID for taking the vaccine.
How do you feel about the world reopening?
I feel that the world can open up, but I think it has to be fair enough that the countries that are rich and could afford get all the vaccine that you have for your country, and then all the extra vaccine. Give it to the other countries that need it. Because every country can't afford those vaccines. And the ones, especially the ones who can't afford it because of the corruption in their country, because the money's mismanaged and things like that, take them to the point that when they have that like that, and we got extra vaccines, give it to those countries. Because we don't get this done around the world, we're going to be dealing with this. We're going to be dealing with this... A vaccine and a coronavirus for a long time. It's not going to end next year. I guarantee you, mark my words, if God Almighty allows me to go past that time, I guarantee we're going to be dealing with coronavirus in 2023. Easy. Easy. This is not going anywhere because a lot of people don't want to take the vaccine and a lot of people are doing very, I call it rude and disrespectful things to the public. They're allowing the public to do all type of things that's not good. Mm-mm. You can't make people take the vaccine, but people have to be more conscientious about the scientists. The scientists is doing this. But when the government gets involved in it like Trump did, and then, you know, making jokes about China and all that type of stuff like that, saying very derogatory things about the Asians and about Africa, the shithole countries and all of that type of stuff like that, that doesn't help the people in the world. That doesn't make everybody be united. We got to fight this as one big family of the human race. Forget these stupid borders they got in these different countries. You know, they got Africa right now cut up into 54 different countries, right? Who put those borders there? White people from Europe. We didn't put it there. Africans didn't put it there. It was the people, all the countries that was colonialized by different countries who put those borders there. And because you put those borders there, you allow these guys, these dictators, all this corruption goes down, and something like this that's going down now, you don't have time to be playing games with people's life. You get that vaccine and you get it in as many arms and people as you can. Because if you don't deal with this COVID, believe me, you're going to be dealing with 2, 3, 4 years from now. Easy, easy.
What's the first thing you're going to do when you have your freedom from the pandemic?
Oh, I'm going on a vacation. I'm up and out of here like Superman. You hear me? You're going to say, where's Neil yet? I don't know. I'm going to be gone.
How do you think the world will be changed when we come out of this pandemic?
Well, I'm hoping that it changes in a way that people are more human and they look at humanity in a positive light. That's what I hope. You know, you got to keep your faith, but I know a lot of people are not going to want to do that. There's too much racism here in this country. That's why at the age that I am, 69 going on 70 in September, I'm ready to leave this country, go live somewhere else for a while. I had enough of here. Serious. Everybody's rushing to come to the United States. I'm trying to leave. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to leave because I can always come back here with no problem. Let me go somewhere else to see what it's about.
Okay. The next question going to be about the BLM protests. About protest people.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
They need to deal with protest people better and deal with them more humane, because when they protest, that's the voice of the people, letting the government know you're not taking care of us right. You know, right now, all of these Republicans refuse to give the people money, right? But as soon as the economy gets hurt, right? They're ready to bail out these big banks, these big Wall Street firms. They're ready to give corporations money, right? But if you wasn't taking taxes from us, you wouldn't have that money to give to the corporations. Like Obama was president, he saved Ford and General Motors. He saved the auto industry in this country. If he didn't do that, you know what would happen then? All of these cars in this country would be made by Korea and Japan, not the United States. That, when he did that, I had no problems with, because it kept the economy up. A lot of people of color work for General Motors and Ford. But it should have never got to that point. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
It should have never got to that point. You have enough money. Take care of the people as well as the government, and take care of the corporations. But don't put the corporation and the government before the people, because we pay the senators' salary. We give them the right to have a decent life. But when you're in that position as governor, president, congressman, senator, do not forget how you got there. You just didn't walk into that job. You had to be voted in there. And who voted you in there? The people. Your constituents, the state that you come from. You're working for those people there. Treat them right. You know, make yourself an example to this country and to this world of how you should treat the people. They're not going to stop protesting around the world. Believe me, they're not going to stop. And every time they protest, the police is going to have less and less authority over the people. You're going to have to give in. Because you can't just be tear gassing people and hitting them with big rubber bullets this big and, you know, trying to shut them down. That's their God-given right to protest. Freedom of speech. That's the law in this country.
Okay.
So I don't appreciate how they deal with us. I'm praying that it gets better. These people come to light. Because all this racial stuff that's going on in this country, where black men are getting killed, it's not good. When George Floyd got murdered the way he did, the world and the United States protested. Why? Because that lady stood there and filmed that whole thing. And when you seen it, you seen it right there on TV. You couldn't dispute that this man didn't kill this guy. Yeah, four experts came up for the prosecutor and said he was murdered. 90 seconds to almost 2 minutes, right? That man was not breathing. It's like his whole right side, because the weight of the four officers on him was crushed. The medical examiner said it's like they cut his lung out, because that lung was dead, was not getting any air.
Do you remember where were you and what you thought when you first saw and hear about George Floyd murder?
I was home looking at TV and seeing it. And how I felt, I was pissed off. I was pissed off and mad to, you couldn't imagine how mad I was in my house seeing that man die like that. You see, I live through a lot of assassinations in this country. Assassinations where people killed our leaders. They killed Martin Luther King. They killed Mega Evers. They killed Malcolm X. You know? They killed John F. Kennedy. They killed Robert Kennedy. In my lifetime, I've seen already 5 or 6 different assassinations in this country. And this country got the nerve to try to say that they civilized. They're not civilized. And you know how you see that and you know that? When Trump became president, look how these white people came out. They felt emboldened. They felt that they had the right to be racially, to be racist. All they did when Trump came in there, it allowed them to expose these white people in this country, where some of these white people in this country couldn't believe how some of the white people were acting. They couldn't believe it, you know? They couldn't believe how these people were acting. These people were acting crazy. They was acting very rude and racist to black people in this country. From the people to the police officers, right? No one had respect for us. No one. So that's how it affected me. I was very mad and upset.
Explain to me why you think this anti-racist protest erupted.
It erupted because it was always there. People kept their eyes closed. They didn't want to believe that these white people were racist. You understand? They didn't want to believe that they were racist. And they've always been racist. I remember back in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, up to 2021. They're still racist in this country. We are the only people that came to this country, and we didn't come here on our own. They brought us here. Everybody else is in this country, they came here on their own. Nobody brought them here, but everybody else that was here, they all got reparations and money from the government for the things that they did to them. You know? The Japanese American that was here in this country and that was born in this country, they put them in detention camps. You hear me?
Yeah, I heard you.
And they put them there and treated them bad. And then years later, they had to give them restitution as far as a certain amount of money for each one of them. They're trying to do that now with us. And they're doing it in such a way where they resentfully don't want to give us any type of money or any restitution for bringing us here as slaves. So these white people feel that they got the right to act the way they do because nobody in government is acknowledging us as people. No one. Just think about it. We the only group of people that's been brought to this country. We didn't ask to come here.
Of course.
And this country is not even designed for us to be here. We built Washington, D.C. two times. The first time, and then when they had the war, they burnt it down. And we built it back. When you go down to Washington, D.C., you see that place? The whole place, guess who was designed by? A black architect. Okay? He designed Washington, D.C. The streets, everything, the buildings, everything. A black man did that. And they still don't want to give us the recognition for it. You know?
What are some of the reasons, do you think, protesting black American and the North Black Alliance are angry about condition in the United States?
They should be upset about the condition in the United States. They don't have any respect for us. They don't got a respect for our men, our children, our black young men, our women. They have no respect for us in any type of way. They never want to acknowledge that they're racist towards us. And the world gets a chance to see it every day on the news. Just recently, we had a black lieutenant, an officer in the army, and this white officer pulled him over, pepper sprayed him, and made him lay down on the floor in the street. You know what they did to that white officer? Right away, they fired him. How are you going to take a lieutenant, an officer for the United States Army, a high-ranking officer, and you're going to put him on the ground? You're going to pepper spray him like he's a criminal for driving his car? This man has so many complaints against him. When they did that and they had it on videotape, boom, that was it. They fired him right on the spot. By the time he took off his uniform and went back to the station for that incident, he was fired. That just happened last week.
Do you believe there are issues with the criminal justice system in the United States that have helped flame this protest?
Yes. And it's not fair the way they treat us in crimes in the justice system. The justice system in this country is not designed for us. They don't respect us. They feel that way, and they feel emboldened. In other words, they feel the right to treat us the way they treat us. They don't care about us. The social justice system in this country was purposely designed after slavery was ended. They had the Ku Klux Klan that used to run around and chase us down and abuse us after we were free. Then they would take us and they would put us in jail, and that still affects us today. The justice system and the penal system for this country hurts more black people and black families than any group of people that's in this country. They need to change it.
When did you become aware of those issues?
Very young. Very young. I was like maybe 9 or 10 years old before I made 10, and I was aware of that. Very aware of it. All through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. In the 2000s. You know?
Do you think the history of race, of racism in the United States impact BLM movement?
Yes. It impacted it because Black Lives Matter. And when they did that, it was made by a black woman. The white world couldn't accept it. Why? Because everybody in the world took that allegory. They took that and they ran with it. I don't care if you was in Germany, England, Japan, or any country in the world, you know? Any country in the world adapted what they had to say about the Black Lives Matter. So a lot of times, people that resented it, like these supreme racist people that we have in this country, they made things worse or try to disassemble that whole thing. They tried to get it where they would try to take away the feeling of the people or take away their protests like it was nothing. But the more they try to do that, more and more people from around the world got involved in it. And you can't tell the world what to do. because the world's seen what they seen on TV, with all these black people being killed and these officers getting away with it.
How have the uprise across the country shaped how do you think about your ethnic identity and your place in U.S. society?
Personally, myself, like I said before earlier, I'm tired of being here. I'm tired of living through this here. I'm tired of seeing it on TV and I'm killing black people like they're nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I can't take it anymore. I got to go to a black country. I got to go to a black country in the continent of Africa. I got to go back to the motherland and get into it seriously. Because this is not something that, you know, you should have to live through year after year after year.
Do you have any story you are willing to share about encounter you have had with racism or police?
Oh, I've had incidents with the police chasing after me, and then when I stopped and turned around, they're going to talk about, oh, I look like somebody and I'm dressed like somebody who did a crime. I said, look, let me tell you something. I live a block away from here, and I'm going to the train station to pick up my wife because she used to work late. So the longer you detain me here, that's a black woman that's over at the train station waiting for somebody to pick her up. Now, God forbid if something happens to her, you're chasing me over here and stopping me, and I didn't break any laws. I didn't do any crimes. So eventually, they let me go, because I told them that I had got out of the, I just came out of the Air Force and got married to my childhood girlfriend, and I'm going to pick her up. So they decided that, oh, this is not the guy who did it. This is somebody who just came out of the Air Force with an honorable discharge and everything. So they let me go. But they stopped me in the middle. You know where the concourse is at?
I don't know where you used to live at.
Burnside Avenue in the Grand Concourse.
Oh, Grand Concourse?
Yeah, they stopped me in the middle of the Grand Concourse.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, and they had the guns out and everything. Oh. They could have easily killed me.
Awesome.
So when they did that, the traffic totally stopped. Nobody moved. They all watching what's going on. But at the time, you didn't have telephones. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so if these guys would have did something to me, they didn't have body cameras. Nobody would know what would happen. Whatever the cops said, that's what they would have went for.
Have you... Sorry about this question. It was a mistake. Yeah. Have you learned about an experience for someone close to you? Like who was in the protest?
Oh. I used to go to protests for the Black Panthers. You've heard of the Black Panthers, right?
Yeah, I heard about it.
Okay, these people had a bad picture about the Black Panthers. Let me tell you what the Black Panthers were. There was a community organization that made it possible with Maurice Shriver, you know Arnold Schwarzenegger, the bodybuilder?
No, the
big body, you've heard of him.
Yeah, I heard.
And his wife used to be, her name is Maurice Shriver, she's a Kennedy.
Oh.
Her father, his name was Sergeant Shriver. He got with the Black Panthers, right? You know what they did? They started feeding the little kids food in the morning so they won't be hungry while they're in school. But all they say about the Black Panthers, if they were terrorists, they were bad people. They wasn't bad people. They were practicing their rights, their First and Second Amendment rights. And they took it to the fullest. They used to walk through the street with shotguns, black berets, leather jackets. They used to protest about any injustice that was going on in this country. You know, so I learned a lot from that because I used to go to their demonstrations. You know, so those are some of the things I've seen. I've seen people get pulled over. I've seen people get harassed because of their color of their skin. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. That's why I'm so fed up and tired of this country. Yeah.
How has BLM shaped the culture?
It's woken the people up. It's made them wake up. band together and support each other and support these black women and support these people from around the world that is respectfully looking at us in this Black Life manner and see how we handle it.
How have the past few months changed? How do you think about police and racism in the United States?
It hasn't changed that much. It's still the same way it was. The police are very racist. They try to pretend that they're not, and they are. It's the situation where they have to be retrained on how they look at black men and black boys and black families. That's what they got to do. So it's been bad. Some people say it's getting a little bit better. It might be. But the thing that gets to me is that they should have never have to get to that point. Should have never been able to happen.
What have you seen your peers doing that inspire you?
Well, some of my friends that I know, you know, they like young entrepreneurs or they work for themselves in some type of capacity. So that type of stuff like that affects me. And on top of it, it's good. You know, it makes you think positive about our people. And it makes you feel hopeful that the things will change. And hopefully I'll be here still to see it. Years ago, I used to always say, you know, I wanted to be a certain age, man. Maybe, hopefully I might be able to see a black president one day. I was here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that was something that I thought about when I was like 10, 12, 13, 14 years old in the 60s.
How do you explain folks who respond to BLM with All Life Matter?
But the people that get into BLM, you know, Black Lives Matter?
Yeah. How do you explain folks who respond to BLM with All Life Matter?
Well, the people that get into it, they're trying to change things to make people think a certain way, to wake them up, as they would say. And by doing that, the people have to make it that everybody gets into at least listening to each other. Because when you sit down and you listen to each other, you learn something. So that aspect of it is what I look at.
Like I say, if you feel tired, you don't have to answer all of these questions.
Yeah, well, go ahead, keep going.
Okay. Is there anything else about the anti-racist uprising you like to share?
Well, I think personally, it has to get together where the people start talking to each other. Because if they start talking to each other, they'll get a chance to understand what's going on. And they can write that, you know, they can get into that and make it right. But if we don't communicate and get the other side to see our point of view and our life, then it'll be a situation where there won't be that much change, very little change.
What was going through your mind when you first heard the United States Capitol was invaded?
It was invaded in Resurrection. I was mad. I was very mad. You know, they're mad because they give white boys privilege. If that was black people doing that who came to D.C., it'd be a lot of deaths and it'd be a lot of people locked up in jail for a long time. They did that and allowed that to go down to insurrection, right? You remember the Million Man March?
Yes, I remember.
They went there. To D.C. There was all over D.C., right? Over 1 million men. Not one incident of anybody getting bothered by the police. Not one incident of anybody that was there getting pulled over, you know? And they didn't come to D.C. to cause any problems. That was an enlightening situation there, right? To enlighten the world and enlighten the superheroes. The superheroes are the people that take their life in their own hands and go out there in the front lines to make something happen, you know, for the better.
What are your reaction to the invasion of U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters on January 6, 2021?
I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Because if this president wasn't in there and being emboldened, figuring that these white people had the right to demonstrate and so forth, that would have never happened. And when all that happened like that, that was unnecessary. To let our capital be invaded by insurrectionists, people that was like against this government, fine. This is one of the countries that you could just get yourself to the point that when you have people that act like that, you have to make sure that the other people are watching that. And it has to be exposed to bring about change. When things happen behind closed doors, you don't know what's happening behind that door. How could you make a decision to change that? That's the same thing that's in this country. Like, these white people are acting a certain way, and people are closing their eyes, and they don't want to deal with it. But they're going to have to deal with this here. Because between all the people that's in this country, all the people of color is going to outnumber the white people. Because the white people are not having children like they used to. Okay? And if you put all the minorities together that's in this country, they basically, they're almost as high as what the white people are. But what's going to happen in the next generation? It's going to be more people of color and less of them. You know, that's why right now you see a lot of white women being with black men, you know, because they know their race is dying out. And people are now embracing people of color, dark skin or whatever, from different ethnic backgrounds. You know, you got the Honduras that are black. You got the black people in Mexico. They got a whole village of black people. They're true Mexican and been there. They've been there now. They've been coming to this part of the world for over 700 years. The white man ain't going to be coming here no more than like 400,000. Or like we say this way, a very large percentage of them are coming here, right? But the amount of people that's coming here into the country basically outnumber the white people. And that's why they're running around scared now, because they figured this was their last stand, that they can get that many of them through the security they have in place now for D.C. They just can't walk up inside there and say, well, I'm going to the museum. No, that's not going to happen. So it's changing. It's definitely changing.
What do you think about President Trump's reaction to the invasion?
He's very upset. You said Trump?
Yeah.
Oh, Trump is happy.
Like, his reaction.
His reaction is it's okay with him. He don't find anything wrong with what the people did. Because he literally thought that the Democrats were trying to take the White House away from him. And yes, that's what's going to happen. But what are you going to do? You know, Joe Biden. The young lady there, the vice president, right? Kamala Harris. People like Barack Obama. These people are trying to bring about change. Oh. And when it gets on that scale, right? You can't change it. You can't stop it. You know, it's like a car. You put them at the top of the hill and just take the brake off and let them go down the hill. We're along the line of this car traveling on its own down the hill. Where do you think you're really going to be able to jump in and stop that? There's no way. You're going to get dragged down the street, period. And you might get dead behind it, too. Ain't nothing you can do about it. All you can do is just protest, protest, protest. If you can't get these police stations outside this country in different variants of their uniforms or a variety of different looks, and they're allowed to do that because of freedom of information and their rights, what you got to do is come up with a way to do it. You got to sit down and talk about it and make a plan. That's the only way the change is going to come about in this country. That's my opinion. That's just one opinion. But I truthfully, honestly believe more change could come out of this here if people, how would you say, get together and organize in a more positive way. A lot of social change needs to be brought about. All the racism that's being done in this country needs to be changed and dealt with. We can't allow this to keep going on. This is 2021, and you still have people that got problems with a set of people or a race of people that they probably don't even have a black person for a friend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
That's a lot of people here in this country like that.
So the following question is going to be like, what do you think about the impeachment trial of former President Trump?
I personally don't like the way it is. You know, too many diehard Trump people still follow him because they like him. They feel that the other guys are too soft. They don't say what they mean and mean what they say. They got that same thing out looking for, the politicians now.
How do you explain the lack of hostility between two political parties?
It's ridiculous. Because you got a party to go to. Something that you believe in. If you have a situation where you have a politician or a person that's trying to straighten out a politician, right? And you don't give that person a fair chance to express their question to you, then you're a knucklehead, because a lot of times all it is something that could be taken care of. Like, you know, you say you where you coming from, to come home from friends' houses and things like that. You should be able to walk the streets and don't have any fear about anybody attacking you, trying to rape you, any of that type of stuff, right? So when that happens like that, it's by the people. The people get together and organize and make these changes come about. The government and them, all they got to do is put it into a bill and then get the other senators and congressmen and people and representatives to try to resolve it that way. You got to have more. Like when I was a counselor for the organization that I was part of, we used to have meetings with the police. And when we had meetings with the police in the community center, we would have people from the neighborhood that have problems with the police too. So now you got, instead of having a little, having a situation where you can get people to organize and demonstrate in a peaceful manner, so these white people stop doing what they're doing evilness to black people and to the white people in this country. Look, you got more people on welfare than any time in history. And the majority of people on welfare and get food stamps and all that, you know who they are? They're white. They make it difficult for us to get it, but they, as white people, can get it whenever they want. Answer a few questions, fill out an application, boom, they got it. But us, what do they see first? Before they see anything else, this.
The skin.
The skin color. And that changes the way they think about us. They look at us as we're less than. You know, so that's what we're living with.
What is your reaction to the day of protests that have followed the death of George Floyd?
I seen a little bit what was going on when George Floyd had got killed. I see when he tried to defend himself,
If you're tired or you don't feel comfortable.
No, I'm getting tired, yeah. Okay. But I don't have no problem talking about anything.
Okay.
Look, let me tell you something. Let me tell you a quote. They say if you don't answer and talk to your elders, right, and they go, you know what that's like? If you burnt down a library. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what I'm saying.
Because when you don't have anything on your own and you got to get information, where do you go? You go to the library.
Yes.
To get your information. So every time you let a senior citizen, person up there in age, pass away, and you never sat down and talked to them, you're letting the library burn down.
The next question is going to be, how the hostilize or just flow and sequence fight influence you?
I looked at it and it could affect me because that can happen to me. Easily. I could walk out of here minding my business and walk right over there where my car is parked at, right? Let the police come down the block and see me walk into the car, right? The only thing that will make them stop approaching me, if they see me with the oxygen on, they see me walking with the cane. Well, this guy couldn't do anything to nobody, you know? But if I didn't have all of that, it'd be very easy for them to pull me over and mistaken me for somebody else or doing some crime. So it doesn't shock me. You know, it doesn't shock me one bit.
Consider your own entry in an explicit fight, past or present. How was your experience?
How was my experience in present fights? Me, no, personally?
I see. Let me repeat again the question. Consider your own interest in explicit fight, past or present. How was your experience? Like if you consider you had this interest, like if you was involved in the...
What, in the fight?
In the fight.
Or yeah, okay. But me personally, I think in my whole life, I may have had 5 physical fights. Other than that, I didn't have people mess with me and I didn't mess with people. I was a young man back in the day. I didn't like any of my friends to be picked on by bullies. Oh, I don't care how big they were. I get a stick and I beat them like I was their father or their mother. If you bother one of my friends and made my friend cry when I was little, oh, you in trouble. I would chase you down and try to beat you with that stick. You know, I didn't care for people bullying people. So if you was a friend of mine and you had a bully that came along and bullied you, I'll go after them. And then later on, if I got to fight them, I'll fight them. I could win or I could lose. I didn't care. It's just the idea, no, you're not going to just pick on people because you feel like it. That's how it was with me when I was young. You know, I didn't bother people. I didn't look for trouble or nothing like that. I just did and stand my grounds about people being unjust, you know, not being fair to other people. You know, why should you bother somebody who's minding their own business? You're walking by and now you want to pick on them because you know that they're not going to fight you. You know that they don't want to be bothered with you. You know, they just don't want to be bothered and they ain't looking for no problems. So people like that, I would go after. You know, I would go after. I didn't care, you know. I didn't go around at all looking for trouble from anybody.
How have you been overseeing yourself during this time pandemic? And how have you been remained gainful?
Well, I see myself as somebody who takes this coronavirus very serious, and maybe a reason why I have taken it serious because I was sick by it. And once you're sick by something like that, that affects so many people, so many counties and places in the United States and around the world, and now this hand is like, it's weighed at 16 pounds or whatever of pressure. After a while, you can't function. You have to deal with that. You just can't let it keep going. Because all it's going to do is get bigger and bigger and bigger. If you don't attack it or aggressively go after it to try to change it, it's going to keep repeating itself. And that's what happens, you know. It's like a big weight on you, a big hat, you know. If you don't take that hat off and deal with that situation, that hat's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. So you got to look at animated objects or type of things that we know that needs to be taken care of a certain way. If it's not dealt with, that's what happens. You know, just perpetuates itself. It just keeps going, keep going, keep going.
What is the effect of the COVID? What is the effect of the coronavirus pandemic on your life right now?
Recovery. The ability not to socialize with people. You know, staying isolated in the house. Things like that. That's how it's affecting me now.
Many of us are limited in our movement and social interaction. Discuss any weaknesses that have either hindered your ability to live in your life normally.
Well, I think a lot of times with me it's different. I mean, no different than anybody else, but you know, I'll actually be honest and go forefront with it. We all have to feel like we belong together. You know, it can't be just like us and them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It has to be united. The people are getting united. That's what's happening in this country now. You know, when you see those demonstrations, you see a lot more white people in the demonstration than you got blacks. And that's because they know they've been privileged as they were growing up. They didn't have to deal with that. You know, because they might have been white. But believe me, in that same time span, if you was black, forget about it. You're going to get messed with. So it affects you that way. They have to deal with it in this country. They can't just keep letting it go. No way. You can't let it go.
I see.
So how many more questions you have?
I still have two questions left.
Right?
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, go ahead.
What difference can student protest to be made?
What difference can the student protest be made? Oh, it could make a big difference. Your guys are the future. You're the future. They have to deal with you because the day's going to come, it's going to be more of you than them. They're going to be getting old and dying off. You're going to be taking over this world. And because of that, you got to deal with it. Student protests back in the 60s and 70s and everything was serious.
Is there a safer way than to protest to have your message here?
It's a little bit safer now than what it was back in the 60s and the 70s, you know, when I was young. Because back then, the cops didn't care. They can get away with things that they can't get away with today. Because it is these machines that we carry in our hand. Everybody's a reporter. Everybody can film something and put it on TV. And then what we're going through now with George Floyd, if it wasn't by a lady standing on the sidewalk filming the whole thing, we wouldn't even be in trial today. This guy would have never got fired, never got put in jail or anything like that.
Okay, thank you for taking your time for this interview, Mr. Nelly. I really appreciate today for you to give me the time for this interview. And thank you again.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Hope you get a good mark. Yeah. You better get a good mark.
This is the end of the interview, like I did to my uncle and my stepfather. I really appreciate this interview. I really enjoy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.